Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Ali Ramos from Amarillo, Texas. Ali is a licensed social worker, and she has SMA. She was also a contributor to our 31 Days of SMA campaign last year. Now this is the first episode of 2022. So, Ali, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kevin. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. I think I'm really excited for this conversation. And again, thank you, congrats on being the first guest of the new year. So happy new year, everyone. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay. Ali, to get started, can you just give listeners a brief background on yourself? And again, I mentioned that you're a licensed social worker, but if you just want to talk about anything about your story and growing up with SMA.
Yeah, absolutely. I am 34 years old, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I am a member of the disabled community, obviously, and a member of the LGBT community. I started off as a graphic designer, and yeah, I was diagnosed with SMA2 at, gosh, I think it was about 16 months of age. I also had a sister that had SMA, but she passed away before I was born. So unfortunately, I never got to meet her. But, you know, as a 34-year-old with this disability, you do see a lot of people that you just don't get to see grow up, and that's a really hard thing, you know, and it often brings this kind of like fire underneath you. You're like, gosh, it's like a drive that I know a lot of people with this disability have, that we're like, we have to do something to get the word out, that, you know, to change the lives of, hopefully affect the lives of other people after us who do have the same disability. So that's why I got into social work and disability activism, was to make sure that I could make, no matter how big or small of an impact I could, that I could try and, whether it's like politically or just, you know, one-on-one, whether it's with a group, you know, just find any way to make an impact on the laws that we have now.
Absolutely. And go ahead, with your sister, was she your only sibling, or do you have any others?
I do have a brother and a sister on my dad's side, and I did basically grow up as an only child because it was just the age gap, and just a lot of other different things that came into play with that. And I was an only child.
Gotcha.
Household. And so, you know, that I had a lot of friends in the able-bodied community, which meant that I didn't have a lot of the disability community in my life until I was about 23, I would say. Which, you know, I did go to MDA camp until I was like 10. I didn't have that community, and it wasn't really because of choice. It was because of the location. You know, Amarillo is, it's a city, but it's not like Dallas or Austin or a bigger city in Texas. So I was, you know, pretty much like one of the only kids in a wheelchair in school. I just kind of stuck to, like you mentioned earlier, I'm a graphic designer too, so I kind of just stuck in the shadows and focused on my art more than anything growing up.
Yeah, and I remember reading your 31 Days of SMA story, and you talked about that both being kind of isolated from the SMA community and disability communities growing up, and then you said that kind of social media helped expose you to that larger community and made you more connected. Can you talk about that and it was that kind of a factor in making the career shift to activism and social work?
Let's see, I was about 23, like I said, and I got a magazine in the mail. It was one of the SMA magazines. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I can't remember. But there was a woman on the cover who it was talking about SMA and pregnancy. And I was like, people with SMA can have babies? Like, what? And this was in whatever, it was like 2010, I would say. And so it was, it opened my eyes to a lot. And I looked her up on Facebook, and I found her Facebook because I was like, I was so interested and intrigued because I never heard of that, and because it like just kind of being the only person with what I have, no one really encouraged that or talked about it or even like, I didn't know about it. So I messaged her and she opened up my world to a whole just a wild amount of people in living with MD on Facebook, the Facebook group. And so I joined it and I was like, oh my God, there's so many people who get up every day just like I do and who have children, who have relationships, who, I had a lot of friendships. I dated. I was like, I don't know. But it just the world of possibilities kind of opened up at that point for me. And I saw all these really cool things that people were doing regarding like disability advocacy and just like all of the steps that have been made already. And here I was sitting behind a computer, and while I love drawing, I love doing art, I love making things, I was like, I don't feel like this is necessarily what I should be doing at this moment, And so I went back to school. I was about 24. I met my now ex-husband at this point. And we dated, we dated, we got married. I continued going to school for social work. I got my bachelor's, I got my master's, I went through all the internships, went through all the hours and of papers and just tried to drop out so many times because I was so tired. And I was still working at the same time, and I was like, we put ourselves through things that sometimes we just don't listen to our bodies, and we're just like trudging through without thinking of like maybe I should rest, But I made it, and I graduated with my master's in May of 2020, so it was pretty recent. And then the pandemic hit, right before I graduated. And then, as we all have had that pandemic reflection and more isolation than normal, and I decided that I wanted a divorce and that I am not, I had my coming out moment at 33. And so, growing up in this area too is also, it's a very, very conservative area, so that is different timing for everyone. I finally felt safe and stable enough to do that. And, me and my ex-husband, we still speak, we're amicable. But that just kind of, I transitioned into needing something more to complete like an authentic version of myself, to be more transparent. And things just kind of started falling into place with my life and my identity and my therapy, my counseling. I was able to reach a lot of people who are afraid to come out in the LGBTQ community and a lot of people in the disabled community who need to find someone to relate to as far as their finding a therapist that can kind of help them. So, you know, everything is like snowballed in the last year and a half. There have been so many changes and it's been a whirlwind, and like it would take like 3 hours for me to have like an actual like not condensed story, you know. So it's like everything's just kind of jumbled up right now, but that's just a really quick version.
No, it's incredible. Well, hearing that story, I think the really fascinating part is like you have those kind of like two big moments of one, you know, becoming immersed in the disability community and finding that identity and realizing you wanted to get into activism and social work, and then your coming out story and how those intersect. And I'm curious too, so thinking back to before you had, because obviously now you're very independent. We can talk like living situation in a minute, but I like you're very independent, you know, working and everything. But thinking back to when you were 23, before you got that magazine and before you started immersing yourself in the disability community, what was so like, had you had caregivers at that point, or what was kind of your, if you don't mind me asking, like what kind of your situation was there in terms of independence and in terms of your mindset toward that?
Yeah, I am very, very thankful for my parents. They instilled in me a type of independence that is really hard to ask for. You know, like they gave me the courage and they gave me the encouragement too to be who I want to be and to kind of follow my dreams. So at 19 years old, I moved out to Los Angeles, which was 17 hours away. And I did it. Sometimes I do things very on a whim, but I plan it out. But other people don't know that because I just don't talk about it, you know? So like I do things and everything kind of works out in its own terms, but you know, moving with a disability is very hard. So I moved with two people in Amarillo and two friends, and we moved out to LA. I got services set up at 19, 20 years old. You know, I went to art school and then I was like, oh my God, it's too expensive. I can't survive. So I came back. So while I wasn't like completely 100% prepared, I made it, and it was an experience I won't forget. And so I came back and I was still able to get my personal assistant services back because they didn't turn in the correct paperwork to terminate it.
Oh, that's great. See, don't you love it? Sometimes when government institutions screw up, it kind of works in our favor. It's rare, but sometimes it does.
Because, like, if I didn't, I have the really good, I have a class waiver program. So it's one that you get, like, the most hours, okay, which is why I am able to be independent now.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going back to when I was like 12 years old, my parents met a social worker who told them that they need to sign me up for this program now so that when I'm an adult, I can be independent.
Yeah.
So like without that social worker telling them, like, I know you're not thinking about her as an adult, like she's a child, I know this, but you need to prepare for her future. And they let me hire my own people. They let me do that. Right when I turned 18, I got to pick, I got to fire, I got to do the hours, I got to do, and you know, my mom did help me. She gave me the guidance to, like, if I needed help, she would be there. But they also, you know, I did my own taxes. I did my own, like, I did my own bills. I was like, let me get their home when I move back. But they still gave me that foundation to succeed, which is a privilege. It's a very big privilege that a lot of people aren't able to get. And I hope to eventually, if, you know, youth need that guidance of that person, you know, if their parents aren't able to do that, I hope that maybe I can kind of be that guide too, as a social worker and as a therapist, you know. So it's just like, I have a lot of goals. I have a lot of like dreams, and I'm just trying to get my clinical license so I can continue to complete these dreams, you know?
That's fantastic. And oh, there's so many more things I want to ask about that, and we will get to that in just a minute. But if everyone could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so that's a great transition here. You know, you're talking about that, you know, it, like I think you're, you know, obviously all your parents are a big reason for why you're independent and why you're able to make these big changes in your life, both personally and professionally. And so thinking about your experiences in activism and in social work, what are some of the things that have challenged or surprised you the most?
Some of the things that have challenged or surprised me the most in activism is the term activist in a very red district is often looked down upon. It's looked as extreme. It's looked as maybe you should call yourself an advocate, not an activist, which I don't find has the right punch to it. Because advocate's fine, of course, but like I'm an activist. Like I will fight when I need to, and if there are injustices that I see being done, then I will get creative and my as creative as possible as I can in order to try and make things better for the person who's being hurt, you know? And that whether that's for a community, whether that's for any type of minority or oppressed individual or anything. Like, my heart goes out to people who are struggling. And so I found that it's often looked down upon to be the person who speaks out. And although I did know that, you know, it's like you see other people kind of getting hated for reasons that are through movements of like change and justice, it's hard to be the person who is like being spoken to in a negative way, you know? And I think that's the biggest shock is like, oh my God, there's like so many people that don't like me because of the stances that I've taken, especially in my little town of Amarillo, you know? But then there's a lot of people who have come behind me and who have supported me and stood by me. And have come out of who knows where. They're like, they come up to me in like a, like out, if I'm out and about, they'll come up to me and be like, hey, were you that person that did this? I'm like, yeah. You know, and like, it's just really cool to be recognized because you, if people come up to you, you're like, yes. And then if they're like excited to meet you, then you're like, okay, good. And not like, yeah, why? You know? Which, yeah, that's basically the biggest thing that's been a shock in this journey.
Yeah. What was some of like or some of the more public works that you did that got you that kind of recognition?
In, let's see, I think it was June of 2020, there was an attorney in Amarillo that opened up a restaurant, and it had a very racially derogative and slur of a name, and I didn't know that I was going to kind of be the face of this movement, but we basically got me and a whole group of like 600 people got his restaurant closed pretty much, and we had a counter billboard that we put up right beside his restaurant talking about how there is damage in language, you know, and just there was a lot of news reports. There was a lot of slamming on Facebook from the attorney in my direction to where I had to file a police report because it was death related. And, I loved every minute of it. And I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do, is I'm supposed to like kind of be a thorn in people who are creating these toxic and divisive environments, you know? And another one, there was a billboard that was put up by a church here that said something like, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and the wicked of Sodom and blah, blah, blah. And like, we put up another billboard that was, it said that y'all means all, and it had the Texas symbol and a rainbow, and like everyone was posing with it. And we raised a bunch of funding through crowdsourcing, and it was just, it's a really cool thing to be seen by that. And the city council and the mayor have recognized my movements and have supported me. And I ran for city council, and like, just to be involved in the local government, to have these people who are Republican, who, you know, are siding with me as a progressive person because of my stances and the kind of way that I handle it, instead of being like mean about it, I do it creatively, you know? And so it's like, it's been a really cool movement, you know?
Oh, I'm from the South too. So I'm in North Carolina. So anytime you can put y'all in a like resistance type slogan, that's great. I love it. But yeah, that's awesome. Well, and so thinking back to when you started the process of going back to school, pursuing this career, what were, like, did you know kind of what area you wanted to focus on within the realm of social work? Or did you kind of, was that a more natural progress that led you to where you are now?
Well, I started out in psychology because I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. And then a friend of mine talked to me and she was like, you know what? Have you ever looked into social work? And I was like, no, I don't, you know, I don't really know what that is, except like CPS, like everyone says, you know? And they're like, no, it's like a way to learn how to advocate and like learn about the justice system and the law. And like, social workers can be placed in very many things, a lot of things, as long as they have a voice, you know? And that doesn't mean like audibly, that just means like the ability to communicate in whatever way you are able to, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, and I think it's a really cool way to kind of leave your mark on things. And that's why I chose to do social work instead. Like, I wanted to do psychology for the doctor title. You know, I'm like, we call the doctor and shove it, you know, like, do it out of spite. But like, I think that I'm just happy to be where I am right now.
That's great. And well, and I think it's a good point too. A lot of people don't really know what social work entails. And I think more people in our community tend to know, because you have to like have a really good one to help get you caregiver hours and that kind of thing and be an advocate. But I think that's the really cool thing about it, is it does open the doors for so many different things. I mean, you're both like, yeah, you do counseling, you do activism, you do all these things that really open doors and I think tie into different aspects of your story. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so going back to your 2020. So you mentioned you went through the divorce, and if you don't mind me asking, what kind of your living situation is now, and especially with the pandemic, I have to ask, like, what has it been like? Staffing caregivers, maintaining independence, all of those things.
Well, I bought my home in 2014, and I was able to, I mean, I'm still in my home. I have a person, a roommate, who stays here at night. I converted the garage and made it into a bedroom. And so, you know, they come home at like midnight and leave at 7, you know, it's a very cool, like, adaptable situation. Mm-hmm. I also have personal assistants throughout the day who help me get out of bed, get ready, get, You know, they drive my van. They, like I said, I am incredibly privileged to have the things that I do have. And it has taken a lot of hard work, but I had the footing to get there. You know, I do recognize that, that I am very thankful for what I have, you know, and I am also dating a beautiful, handsome trans man who is the light of my life, and we have kind of like made our little family together, you know. We just, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, and I know this podcast is just audio, but you also have some cats and dogs in the background that you also said are like therapy pets, for especially when you're working with clients. So I know I'm sure that's part of your life as well.
Yeah, I have about 50 clients that I see, and anytime they bark, they're normally like, oh, tell them hi, you know, and it's just a part of being with me as a therapist, because my animals are such a pain. They are not emotional support animals, but they are, you know.
Sure.
I love them so much, and anytime they bark, I'm like, sorry. I'm so sorry. And everyone just laughs, you know.
I don't want to jinx it, but they've been really good during this interview. So, you know.
They've been in the backyard barking, but then they're back in. And one of them just slammed my office door open. So now they're all just wandering in. I'm like, okay.
Well, hey, they got to make an appearance, so it's all good. But yeah.
They do.
Yeah. Well, and thinking about your mental health career as well, like, what are some things you've learned about mental health and counseling as it relates to disabled individuals?
Yeah, there is not much schooling in the terms of disability and mental health. And as a matter of fact, I don't even have my own therapist, because I can't find anyone in Texas that is open and non-religious and who understands the impact of disability and mental health and who is understanding of the LGBTQ community. So, I know I'm asking for, like, a unicorn here, but, like, it's really hard. And I think that that's why my caseload built up in, literally, I've only been doing private practice since my supervisor hired me onto a private practice in August, I think. And then before that, I still work with a platform called Cerebral. And so I still work with them. And then they give me their clients, or their clients pick me. And then other people seek me out through the private practice. And so it built up within, you know, I haven't even been doing it for a year, and I've already got a full caseload because of the lack of people who are able to kind of relate to the struggles that disabled people face in the queer community, because there's so many, like, intersections of that.
I was going to say, the intersectionality is so important, and it is crazy that in your field you haven't found a lot of literature or studies on the relation between disability and mental health, because that is so important. And especially when you have multiple identities, like, all that, there should be a wealth of information about it, and there should be a wealth of therapists, like, who can support clients, you know, with those needs. So it's a huge injustice that there isn't enough there. So I hope that, you know, the work you're doing and others out there, that it will change that in the coming years. But
yeah, and yeah. There are, I know several other disability, either focused therapists or disabled therapists themselves in different states. But, like, in Texas, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Texans, if you're a disabled therapist, then hit me up, you know. Or connect.
There's got to be some out there. It's a big state, so hopefully.
It's a big state.
Yeah. That's great. Well, and Allie, so one thing I usually ask people on the show is like advice they have for others in the community. But thinking back about, you were talking about your situation, your living situation now, the independence you have, and like you're talking about it as a privilege, but also, I mean, a lot of it has come through hard work. And thinking about listeners out there who, and I'm sure, I mean, you see, you're in the Facebook groups and forums and stuff, and you know that there are people who, plenty in our community who don't know where to start, where they want independence, they want to do things, but they have no idea where to start. They feel kind of trapped by the system, or how to go about getting caregivers, all these things. What would you say to those individuals who may be listening?
What I would say is never feel like you're a burden, even though it's really easy to feel that way. And keep reaching out to your support groups because people in these groups are the people who have lived through it. And they're the people that have the resources. And, as much as we wish that doctors and like people in the medical community would give us these tips, it's not going to happen, And I think that our own community, whether whatever disability you may have, and if it is, of course, if you're listening because you have SMA or your child has SMA, make sure and get them with their own community. And if you are speaking of parents, I did talk about mine giving me that foundation for independence. It's really easy to basically coddle a child that has a disability because with parents sometimes. And so I feel like you gotta talk to adults in the community too and kind of learn how to kind of let that grip loose a little so your kid can make the same mistakes that other kids do, And it's hard to watch because you've done so much care and you've taken so much time with these little guys and gals and kids that it's hard to kind of loosen that grip. And it's just like I've made so many mistakes and I've learned over and over and over what I can and can't do. And I couldn't have done that if I had decisions made for me, And so just stick with your community. If you don't have a community, I know that there are resources here that can link you there and find an adult that is a mentor if you're in the youth, or if you're an adult, find a friend, And always reach out if you're feeling helpless and hopeless and heavy.
That's fantastic. I totally agree, and I think it's a real that's really good. Hopefully a theme going into this year is just, the importance of community, and something I think especially throughout the pandemic we've all learned the importance of, and so that's really great. Well, Allie, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I imagine there will be others who want to reach out to you, especially after hearing this. So is there anywhere public profiles or anything people can find you, or social media?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a Facebook for my therapy page that you can message me through there, or you can find my phone number. And the URL for that is facebook.com/Ali, Ali Ramos, Ramos Therapy. And you can also email me at, what is my email? I think it's AllieRamosTherapy@gmail.com is a good place to reach me.
Awesome. We'll definitely put those in the description. But yeah, I'm hopeful. Yeah,
Okay.
you may get some new clients after this. Who knows? So we'll see. Yeah.
We'll
Awesome.
see.
Awesome. Well, Allie, thanks so much again. This has been great.
Thank you, Kevin.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow our main website at www.smanewstoday.com for the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.